Chapter 4, The Booking Secret Nobody Talks About. I want to tell you about a venue about 30 minutes outside my city. It's a beautiful property, a classy, rustic-style venue with a ceremony space in a perfectly manicured flower garden overlooking a pond. The reception hall is full of beautiful antiques with open walls that catch the sunset during cocktail hour. Couples love it. It hosts weddings almost every weekend from May through October. Over the past 10 years or so, that one venue has sent me somewhere between 40 and 50 bookings. I didn't pay for a single one of them. No ads, no website optimization, no listing on a wedding directory, no bridal show booth, just a relationship with a woman named Karen who coordinates events there. That relationship started in my third year. The couple had found me through a Facebook ad. They'd already booked the venue and they hired me independently. Karen had nothing to do with it. I was just the DJ the couple chose. I showed up 3 hours early, which is what I always do. I found Karen, introduced myself, shook her hand, and asked where she needed me to set up. I confirmed the timeline with her. I asked if there was anything about the space I should know, where the power outlets were, what the sound was like in the room, whether there were noise restrictions for the outdoor ceremony, and how I could best work with her in the venue to ensure a successful event. During the wedding, I paid attention to her, not in a strategic, calculated way. I just noticed that she was stressed. She was managing a dozen moving pieces at once: caterers, florists, photographers, a slightly anxious bride, and she was doing it mostly alone. At one point during setup, I saw her trying to rearrange some chairs for the ceremony while simultaneously answering a phone call, and I had 20 minutes before I needed to start testing my equipment. So I walked over and started moving chairs. She looked at me like I'd handed her a glass of water in the desert. During the reception, I checked in with her before key transitions. Dance floor is opening in about 10 minutes. Are we good on your end? Not because I needed her permission, but because it made her feel like we were on the same team. When the timeline shifted because dinner ran long, I adjusted without being asked. I didn't complain about it. I didn't make it her problem. I just rolled with it. At the end of the night, before I started packing up, I walked over and asked for her card. I told her the venue was beautiful and that I'd loved working with her. She seemed genuinely surprised that a DJ was saying this. Monday morning, I sent her an email. Short and simple, thanked her for having me, told her it was a pleasure working with her team, mentioned something specific I'd noticed about the venue that I appreciated, and said if she ever had couples looking for a DJ, I'd love to work there again. That was it. That was the whole strategy. Show up early, be helpful, make her job easier, follow up with a thank you email. 6 or 7 weeks later, Karen sent me a message. Hi, Kevin. I have a couple getting married here in October who are looking for a DJ. Can I give them your contact info? That was the beginning of a relationship that has generated tens of thousands of dollars in revenue and counting. Not from ads, not from marketing. From being the kind of person a venue coordinator wants to recommend. Here's what most bedroom DJs don't understand about how wedding bookings actually work, and I didn't understand it either until I was living it. Couples don't find their DJ the way you think they do. First, they book their venue and their wedding planner. Then they rely on those professionals' expertise to figure out who to hire for everything else. If there are no recommendations, they Google wedding DJ near me and scroll through results. They'll browse wedding directories if they have to. But the vast majority of couples find their DJ the same way. They ask their venue or their planner some version of the same question. Do you have any DJ recommendations? And the venue coordinator, who has worked with dozens of DJs over the years and knows exactly which ones are reliable and which ones are nightmares, pulls out a short list of names, two, maybe three DJs she trusts. She hands those names to the couple, and the couple picks one. 70 to 80% of my bookings come from venue coordinators, wedding planners, and past client referrals. The remaining bookings come from online ads and Facebook groups. Relationships are what built my business. One good venue relationship can generate 5 to 10 bookings a year. Build 3 or 4 of those relationships, and you have a full calendar without ever running an ad or optimizing a search result. And the beautiful part is that it costs nothing except being the kind of DJ that venue coordinators want to work with again. Here's something else that might surprise you about this job. No 2 Saturdays are the same. I've worked at wineries, golf clubs, parks, conference centers, barns, backyards, beaches, and clifftops. I've set up ceremony sound on a dock overlooking a lake and run reception speakers through a barn with zero electrical outlets within 50 feet of my booth. I've done weddings where the first dance happened in a garden 100 yards from the reception hall. I've run slideshows during dinner, emceed elaborate grand entrances with full wedding party introductions, and provided background music for outdoor cocktail hours, where the wind was trying harder than I was. I've worked weddings in pouring rain where we had to move everything indoors in 20 minutes. I've worked weddings in equipment melting heat where I was genuinely worried about my gear. I've done weddings with light MC duties, just a few announcements, and weddings where I was essentially the host of the entire evening, calling every moment from the ceremony through the sparkler send-off. Every wedding has a different setup, a different location for the ceremony and cocktail hour and reception, different requirements, different personalities, and a different vision for what the day should feel like. Even when I'm returning to a venue I've worked 50 times, the wedding itself is completely unique. I'm telling you this because I know one of the voices in your head is saying, "I don't know how to do a wedding." And I want you to understand that after 100+ weddings, I'm still showing up to venues for the first time. I'm still adapting to new spaces, new timelines, new requests I've never handled before. The skill isn't knowing exactly how every wedding works. The skill is being the kind of person who shows up, reads the situation, and figures it out, calmly, professionally, and without making it anyone else's problem. If you've been a bedroom DJ for 1,000 hours, you already know how to adapt. You've adjusted sets on the fly, troubleshot technical problems in real time, and read rooms that weren't giving you what you expected. That adaptability is exactly what wedding DJing demands. The venues and the details change every week. That's what makes this job exciting instead of repetitive. Now, I know what's happening in your head right now. You've been reading this whole book building belief. You believe the opportunity is real. You believe your personality is the advantage. You believe you can charge well. You believe the equipment isn't the barrier. And underneath all of that belief, there's a voice that's been getting quieter with each chapter, but hasn't gone away. The voice says, "What if I screw up someone's wedding?" Let's deal with that right now, because I know this voice intimately. It lived in my head for years. In my early days, before every wedding, I'd have the nightmares, the kind where you're standing behind your decks and the music cuts out. Dead silence. 200 people staring at you, the bride's face falling, you're hitting buttons and nothing's working, and you wake up at 3 a.m. with your heart pounding. I'd lie there running through every possible disaster. What if my controller freezes? What if the mic dies during the vows? What if I play the wrong first dance song? Some weeks I barely slept before a wedding, and then the wedding would start, and the fear would get pushed into the background by the sheer act of doing. My training would kick in. Play this song. Watch that transition. Check in with the coordinator. Read the room. The nightmares never match reality, not once. But it took me a while to get ahead of it. The thing that finally changed was a habit I started the night before every wedding. Instead of lying in bed cycling through everything that could go wrong, I'd close my eyes and picture the end of the night. The last song fading out. The couple walking over while I'm packing up. The bride smiling. The groom shaking my hand, me loading gear into my car, tired but fulfilled, knowing I just helped make someone's biggest day everything they wanted it to be. Then I'd let my brain work backward from that picture. If that's the outcome, what do I need to prepare? What do I need to bring? What do I need to be ready for? Instead of spiraling through fears, my brain started generating solutions. What if the mic dies became, bring a backup mic and test both before the ceremony? What if the timeline changes became check in with the coordinator every hour? The nightmares mostly stopped. Not because the stakes got lower. Every wedding still matters enormously to me. But a brain locked onto an outcome doesn't have room to spiral. It's too busy finding the path. The fear never disappears completely. I still feel a hum of nerves before every wedding, even 100 weddings in. But I've learned that the nerves make me better. They make me show up early, double-check my gear, over-prepare for every scenario. The fear is fuel, as long as you don't let it become paralysis. And here's what I can tell you from the other side. The fear is always worse than the reality. Always. Every nightmare I ever had was 10 times more dramatic than anything that actually happened. Let me give you one more example, because I want you to understand that things going wrong at weddings isn't a possibility, it's a certainty. Things will go wrong. The question isn't whether they will, but how you'll handle it when they do. One of my best weddings last year started with a disaster. I'd set up in the reception hall exactly where the wedding planner told me to. Ceremony was beautiful. Cocktail hour went great. Dinner went smoothly. Everything was perfect. Then about 5 minutes before the dance was supposed to start, the planner walked over and said something that made my stomach drop. "We're moving the dance floor to the patio." Not shifting it a few feet, moving it around the corner to an outdoor space that was almost out of sight from where I was set up. My speaker arrangement wouldn't work at all from where I was. I needed to completely reorganize my subwoofer, my tops, my entire setup, and I had maybe 10 minutes before the couple expected the dance to begin. Internally, I was panicking. My brain was doing what brains do under stress, cycling through everything that could go wrong. The speakers won't sound right outside. I can't move all this gear fast enough. Everyone's going to watch me scrambling. This is going to be a disaster. Then I did what I've trained myself to do. I stopped focusing on the problem and started focusing on the outcome. I pictured the dance floor packed. I pictured the couple in the middle of it, surrounded by their friends and family, everyone moving, everyone happy. I thought, that's what needs to happen. The speakers need to be over there for that to happen. So how do I get them there efficiently? And the answer appeared. Not magically, practically. My brain stopped spinning and started solving. I figured out the fastest way to reorganize, moved everything calmly and methodically, and had the system up and running with 2 minutes to spare. Nobody at that wedding knew there was a problem. The couple had no idea. The guests had no idea. The planner barely noticed because by the time she looked over, everything was set up and ready. It turned out to be one of the best weddings of my entire year. The dance floor was electric. The patio setting actually created a more intimate energy than the reception hall would have. And the venue coordinator, who watched me handle the whole thing without breaking a sweat, referred me to 3 couples in the following months. That's what happens when you focus on the outcome instead of the obstacle. Your brain is an incredible problem-solving machine, but it can only solve the problem you give it. If you give it, "What if this goes wrong?" it'll find 100 ways things can go wrong. If you give it, "How do I make this outcome happen?" it'll find the path. I call this the North Star Method, and it's something I teach in detail in the course. But the principle is simple enough to carry with you right now. When something goes sideways, and it will, don't stare at the problem. Look at the outcome you want, hold it clearly in your mind, and let your brain work backward to find the solution. Here's what I need you to understand about fear and bookings and everything we've covered in this chapter. Venues don't recommend perfect DJs. They recommend DJs who are reliable, professional, and easy to work with. They recommend DJs who show up early, check in throughout the day, make their job easier instead of harder, and follow up with a genuine thank you afterward. They recommend DJs who handle problems calmly, because problems happen at every wedding. And what matters is whether the DJ added to the chaos or absorbed it. And they recommend DJs that the bride and groom were ecstatic about. You don't need 100 weddings on your resume for a venue coordinator to recommend you. You need one. One wedding at that venue where you showed up as the kind of professional she wishes every DJ was. One follow-up email that reminds her you exist and that you're easy to work with. That's the start of a relationship that can generate 5, 10, 15 bookings over the next few years. The fear of screwing up is real, and I'm not going to tell you to just get over it, but I am going to tell you that the fear is based on a fantasy version of failure that almost never happens. The reality of your first wedding is much closer to my experience than to the catastrophe in your head. You'll be nervous. Something small will go sideways. You'll handle it. The couple will love you. And you'll drive home wondering why you waited so long to start. You have the personality that books weddings. You have permission to charge what you're worth. You know the gear isn't the barrier. You know that bookings come from relationships, not marketing. And you know that the fear, while real, is manageable. So what does the actual path look like? How do you go from reading this book to standing behind the decks at your first wedding, then your second, then your third? How do you turn everything you've learned in these pages into three completed weddings in the next 6 months? That's exactly what we're going to map out.